So we're going to continue with our series, The Stars in the Sand. And I've been asked to speak about worship, warfare, and laying hold on the promise of God. And for those, as Daniel suggested when I, in his introduction, I've been involved in worship in this church, very much like Ian and Liz, for about 47 years. So just a little while. I want to start by recapping. So if we could have the next slide, please. Is it easier for me just to give you the nod? We've been seeing a number of people speaking since Daniel introduced the topic and began to speak about the making of a promise, speaking about that promise to Abraham and how that was then going to extrapolate down through the different generations that followed, and in fact to us today still that promise exists. And Beth continued that with the promise carriers, speaking about Isaac and how that then worked out through Jacob. Micah then brought Joseph into the scene as time is moving on, but the same promise, the same leading of God. And last week Kerry was speaking about the wilderness and understanding kind of what that means, both in terms of a time of difficulty, but a time of preparation, of reaching the shore and crossing into the promised land. And today, we want to continue to look at the life of Joshua. So, I want to really sort of address the whole area of context. You know, the journey we've been on sets a certain context, but it's really important that as believers that we see scripture in terms of context. We need to understand what was written to the people of the day. We need to understand what was said to them in their time frame before we then try and extrapolate any meaning for that for ourselves. And I'll give you an example of that. In 1 Corinthians, Paul says, as it is in all the churches that we have, we don't allow women to speak. In fact, it's disgraceful for women to speak in church. That's a bit strong, but that's what he said. And then in Ephesians, he says, and wives, submit to your husbands, learn from them at home. Now, there's some churches that still do that. Some of your strict brethren churches, it's all blokes. In Pioneer, of course, there's a lot of women in leadership. And in this church, if you tried saying to Kerry or some of the other people that speak, no, you're not allowed to, you know, shh. It wouldn't go down particularly well. Now, why was that? What's the context for that? Well, he was writing to the churches. And at that time, you've got the Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, and so on. But the prevailing religion of the day was Diana of the Ephesians, which is a fertility god and was a female-only cult. And it was female-led. And what really Paul was saying is, the church is different. There's something that differentiates us here. This isn't a woman-led thing. He wasn't particularly saying it's necessarily a bloke-led thing either, actually, because he had women in his entourage. He had women as home group leaders and so on. And scripture talks about your daughters and your sons will prophesy. But at the time, he was saying this is a differentiating factor. So we have to see that in context. Otherwise, we try and take literally what it said, and two-thirds of the people in this room will be silent. It's not really on. So the first we pick up in Joshua is in Exodus 17, verse 9. And there says, Moses says to Joshua, choose some of our men to go and fight the Amalekites. Now, if you look at the time frame of this, this was within about a month and a half to 2 months of them crossing the Red Sea. So thinking about that, that means that Joshua, he wasn't two months old, you know. He was brought up as a slave. He was living in Egypt. He saw Moses come in, take on Pharaoh. He saw the plagues. He saw the things that happened. He saw the Passover. Now, it doesn't tell us whether he was the eldest son or not. It just said, always talks about him as Joshua, son of Nun, which when I was a lot younger meant I didn't think he had a father. but you know, there's no There's no real understanding about whether he was a son that had escaped the Passover. But it could have been. You never know. So we're seeing him. He's come through all of this, and now he's coming into a situation where he's now been asked to go and fight the Amalekites. Now, the wider promise wasn't just about the promised land. It was about that through Abraham and his descendants, all peoples of the earth will be blessed. That was the bigger picture stuff. And really, that goes right back to Eden when God created man in his image and wanted a relationship and for them to multiply and to basically live as his people. Next slide, please. So the story of the battle is that he sends Joshua in to fight the Amalekites, and Moses goes to the top of a hill. And he raises his arms in worship, and he raises up the staff of God. And all the time his hands are up, Joshua's winning. And when his arms start to get tired, when he starts to fade, Joshua starts to lose. So Aaron and Hur get alongside him and encourage him, holding his hands up, helping him to continue the worship until Joshua had been successful. Now, it says in Exodus 17:14, write this down on a scroll so that this is remembered. There's an important principle here, that worship was so key to the battle. And it goes on to say, and make sure Joshua hears it. I'd never really come across that before. But it's saying, make sure Joshua hears it. I think Moses was acting as a mentor. He'd already got his eye, you know, he'd pulled him forward as a commander, but he's saying, look, this guy's important, but he needs to get this message. Worship is key. And in our readings this week in Exodus 23, God said, worship the Lord your God, and his blessing will be on your food, on your water. There'll be no sickness, there'll be no barrenness, and you'll have a long life. And he also says, of when you go in conquest, don't let them live, because they will cause you to sin. Worship of their gods will be a snare to you. So worship's a really big deal. Next slide. And Moses says, what is it that's going to differentiate us from everyone else? And God says, my presence will go with you. You know, if you look at them in flesh and blood, it's men, women, children, livestock, all the rest of it. What is it that makes them different? What is it that makes us different to the people that you see in your work every day? God says, my presence will go with you. And Moses' response was, God, if you're not in this, don't send us up. Now, Kerry mentioned last week about the miracle building in as part of a talk. And she said, you know what? The doors are opening and we're continuing to walk forward. But if this isn't it, God's promise is still there. And our cry really as a church and as a people is, God, if you're not in this, we don't want it. I've put employment there. It's something that I've adopted myself over my life. I'm currently 68. I know I only look about 40, but every job I've ever gone for, I've gone in and my prayer has been, God, if this isn't where you want me, don't let them ask me. Because if they ask me, if they offer me the job, I'm going to take it. And that's been, if you like, my go-to every time I've gone for a job, because I want to be in the place that God wants me to be. So we've got this far. Let's check in with a young Joshua who's been growing up within this story, because I want to actually look beyond the events. I want to think about the personal person, Joshua, and what might be going on in his head and how that might work.
Things are happening very fast now. For years, we've been told about God promising us our own land. First, there was our escape from Egypt and the miracle at the Red Sea. Then we defeated the Amalekites. And now we're at the border. I'm being sent in as a spy. Things are very exciting.
So, he looked excited, didn't he? But thank you, Danny, for doing that. So then there's they go in as a spy, and it says actually they're in for 40 days. And before I move on, there's 40 days checking out the land. There's 40 days of rain with Noah. There's 40 days of temptation of Jesus. You know, that could be a whole different study of what 40 days actually means. But, right on. So the report of the spies is a mix. On the one hand, they're seeing fantastic produce, huge grapes of clusters of grapes, loads of fertility in the land and real opportunity. And on the other hand, there's giants and there's fortified cities and there's bits and pieces which are kind of, this isn't good really. So there's this mixture of exuberance and excitement. And Joshua and Caleb, in all democratic fashion, get voted down. You know, they sort of saying, we've got this, God's with us, you know, the promise has come. It's only 2 months since we all came out of Egypt. We've seen what God has done for us. Let's go in. And they get outvoted and they tear their clothes in frustration. It was also one of the customs that if you were really upset, you ripped your clothes to bits. The sight that the people had outweighed their trust in the presence of God going forward. Their fear was bigger than God in their lives. And when you think about what worship is, surely it is seeing God as supreme. It is seeing God as bigger than anything we can imagine. It's seeing the God who says, in your lives, it hasn't even cropped up in your imagination all the things that I've got planned for those who believe in me. He's so much bigger than anything we fear. And bringing that personally, we've all got fears. We've all got stuff we have to deal with. I remember going for a procedure in hospital. I was scared rigid. I remember sitting on the bed waiting to get checked down, taken down to theatre. And I was getting really wound up. And I was just praying and praying and trying to see God's presence in it. And when they said to me to come down to theatre, I was a wreck. And I had to physically tell myself, legs, get off this bed and start to walk down the corridor. By the time I got into theatre, my blood pressure was 191. So, but God met me in it. We all have to see God as bigger than what we're facing. Otherwise, we're just going to get defeated by our fears every single time. Think about the disciples. They're out on the sea and there's a storm and they're getting buffeted and it says they were scared for their lives. And Jesus just stands up and he goes, I'm here. Just stop it. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, getting thrown in. You're going to get burnt to a cinder. It certainly burnt the soldiers that put them in. And Jesus or God or an angel just appears in the middle and goes, enough. This is fine. I'm in the middle of it with you. Psalm 23, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you're with me. And Paul says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But imagine, go back to Joshua, imagine the disappointment. They've just been outvoted. They're now going to be destined to wander for 40 years in the desert. He thought this was God's timing. Everything was happening. It's not easy. The struggles we face are not easy. Worshipping through difficulty is not easy. Jacob, I can go to the next slide. Jacob, when facing the approach of Esau, who was coming for him, was in fear for his life and he struggled with God overnight, struggled fighting this man in the desert and says, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. Jesus in Gethsemane, in his humanity, really struggling with what he was going to face, but choosing not your will, but mine. I will but use. Now, we often speak of God as majestic, as all-powerful, wonderful, strong. And we see in Philippians where it says that he came, although he was in nature God, he came in humility. But do we see the God who bends to our level, who identifies with our struggles, who wipes our tears, calms our fears, and walks through those difficulties with us, if we let him? And so often we don't let him. So let's see how young Joshua is faring. We're going to move on 20 years, so they're not all the way through. They're sort of stuck in the middle of the wilderness. What's going on in his head? Let's find out.
Times are hard, and I'm caught in two minds. On one hand, Moses has made me his assistant, and we're being led by a pillar of fire. We have enough daily manna, quail, and water, but we seem to be going around in circles while all our parents are dying. And I can't get over my disappointment of not going straight into the promised land 20 years ago. We still believe in God, but a lot of people are scared. Apparently we've got another 20 years of this.
You can imagine, even although he's there with Moses, he's still got 20 years. He's been wandering around this dusty desert. And he knows there's another 20 in front because of what's been told. Many years ago, my uncle, who was a Church of Scotland minister for about 40 years, was doing his final training. He was actually out in Yale University in America. And he was to do a talk as one of his final parts of his training. And he read from 2 Kings 5. It says, "Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram," or Aram. "He was a valiant soldier, but he was a leper." Now, bear in mind that my uncle was speaking to an American audience. He said, "I have 3 points, and my text is, he was a valiant soldier, but he was a leper." And he said, "My first point is this. We've all got our buts." The American audience started to smile a little bit. "All got our buts?" "Yes, I think we possibly have." He spoke about that for a little while. He said, "My second point is," he said, "some buts are bigger than others." And when he reached his third point, he said, "It's easy to see someone else's butt. It's not so easy to see your own." Do we hear the voice of God? Do we hear his promise? Do we hear prophecies spoken over us and then cancel it out by our butt? We say, "That's all right, God, but." So at this point, I'm going to ask you to stand if you've ever had a promise from God, a prophecy, or something where God has spoken to you and said something and spoken over your life. Could you stand? So have a look around. That's probably getting on for half the room, where God has spoken to people. And God speaks to people today. Please sit. Do we hear the voice of God, promise, prophecy, but then match it with a but? Because when we do that, we move from a place of faith and worship to a place of doubt, to a place where we've cancelled out what God has said because we know best, because our finite mind is bigger than his infinity. and we lose sight of the vision that he might have for us, what has been spoken over us. So, to my mind, in thinking about warfare, and bear in mind for those that have been around a while, that so often the triumphant sort of worship battle warfare songs that we used to sing, and for the musicians, normally they were in E minor with a sort of Hebrew sort of lilt to them. That's not really what I mean by warfare. Nor is charging into the land and trying to beat everyone up. But I believe that the biggest battle we face on a day-by-day basis, depends what circumstances, is the battle for our hearts and minds. You know, Moses makes Joshua his assistant, and he's living in the tent of meeting all the time. He doesn't leave it, the Bible says. And in those days, it was the days of the tabernacle, and worship was a really big part of the tabernacle. Last year, I wrote a book on the subject. So if anyone hasn't read this or hasn't got it or is interested, it's called Worship by Numbers. It's available on Amazon. But it really is looking from the book of Numbers all about the tabernacle, the leadings of God, and the importance of worship. So again, just remind people of that, Worship by Numbers. Joshua would remind himself of the promise of God, but it was to be this way for 40 years. And he would have to be overcoming the buts in his mind. He'd be having to overcome the negative thoughts about, oh, why are we still in this desert? Why isn't this happening? Why isn't that happening? And, next slide, thank you. We're now approaching the land of promise. So we're not quite got to the crossing. We're not quite got to the shore as Kerry spoke of last week. But there's trepidation, naturally. You know, this is, we don't know what's the other side of the Jordan. We know that God's promised it, but there's a bit of trepidation here. And three of the tribes approach Moses and say, do you know what? We quite like it here. This is good land. And we'd be quite content just to stay this side of the Jordan. We'd be quite happy to just stay here and make do with this rather than risk going into the promised land. Well, it's fine, we'll come and help you fight, but we want our inheritance, we want our livestock, we want our women, we want everything this side of the Jordan because it's safe. We don't want to risk that by going into the promised land. And the promise was for them too, but they were going to stop short. They've stalled in their faith. Were they perhaps just giving lip service that didn't even go through the ceiling? Were they giving lip service that stopped at the walls of the school as they walked out or as we walk out? And the challenge really in so much of this, you know, and I face this every time there's difficulty, you face this. Are you going to see God as bigger in the battle for your minds and your heart? Because otherwise you get crushed by it. Let's check in with Joshua one more time, see what he's up to now. This has moved on another 20 years.
Well, it seems like deja vu. I was here 40 years ago. Only Caleb and I remain from the leadership then. Even Moses and Aaron have died. Today, I am sending spies into Jericho ahead of a planned attack on the city. We are at war with everyone who lives in the land. Caleb is really keen to fight the people in the hills. He has so much energy. And God has made me leader, tasked with leading the invasion of Canaan and promising to be with me and giving us success. Not bad for two guys in their 80s.
I think we often forget how old some of these guys are. When Moses started to take on Pharaoh, who is 80 years old, Joshua and Caleb are in their 80s, leading the charge, if you like, into the promised land. And that kind of speaks to me. I'm not 80 yet. Thank you. But, you know, I remember hearing a pastor once, and he was getting very old. I mean, he was heading for his 90s. And he said, there's no such thing as retiring when you're a Christian. It might change what we do, might not run up the stairs quite so easily. But actually, I think there's a challenge there, particularly, and I speak to myself and the older members of the congregation, about still seeing what God's got for us. Not settling this side of the Jordan, still looking for that promise, still looking for the words that have been spoken over us. So Joshua's stepping up. And in Deuteronomy, God says, when you go to war and see horses, chariots, and an army bigger than yours, don't be afraid of them, because the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt will be with you. And we see at the beginning of the book of Joshua that God is saying to Joshua, be strong, be courageous, I'm with you. That was the encouragement that would overcome the disappointment. The years that he'd wandered around, seeing all the parents die, seeing all his contemporaries dying off. And in the middle of all of that, God is saying, be strong, I'm with you. And Joshua, we've seen through his life, he knows the presence of God. He knows that God has led them. He knows the vision. He knows that God will give him strength and courage. He knows the importance of worship. He's seen that in battles. He's seen that crossing Jordans. He's seen that in numerous places where God is just so much bigger than anything else that's around him. And he also knows what he's been commissioned to do and to achieve. God is with him. Actually, he also knew that in generations to come, the Israelites were going to fall away from God, because he'd been shown that with Moses. They'd been shown that. And for some of them, you say, well, what's the bother? Because it's all just going to fall apart anyway. He had been commissioned to lead the people in. He had to be faithful to what God had said for that moment in time. But imagine the people. You're going to do what? You're going to send the Ark of the Covenant. That's the tangible presence of God, the tabernacle, the key part of the tabernacle. You're going to send that out in front. And not just a little way, the worship center, if you like. We're not going to just send that out a little way. It's 1,000 yards out in front. For those of you who know this area well, from here, that's Thicket Corner. From here, that's Cox Green School. That's Desborough Park. That's Courthouse Road. That far out in front. Think of the enemy. They could be waiting just the other side. Just, oh, great, is the Ark? We'll just have that. Thank you very much. Didn't come into the consideration. And the Ark went out in front. It was the same with the walls of Jericho. The Ark went out in front. Imagine the people in Jericho sitting there looking, thinking, The music groups walked around the city, and then they went back to their tents. Oh, they did it again yesterday and the day before. A bit strange, really. But that's what they were being told to do. Worship was key and central. And we all know the story that when the people shouted and the trumpets blew, the walls just had no chance. And they went in and annihilated everyone, apart from Rahab, the woman that had looked after the spies. In our readings this week and beyond, we see the progress of taking territory and winning. And eventually it says in Joshua 21, the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of his promises failed. Not one. Sometimes we have to wait a long time. Hebrews tells us we don't always get the promise. We will eventually, but we don't always get the promise. And I remember years ago, there was a guy came to the church. Again, for those that might remember, I can't remember his name, but you might remember the analogy. He had this big shirt with an H on it. He said, it's Hooper Man. And he spoke of this hall, if you like, or this tunnel, this life. And he said, on one side, you can see this. And there's a veil down the middle, and there's the other side that you can't really see what's going on. And he said, when God gives you a promise, when you lay hold on something in faith, you reach through that veil and grab hold of it. He said, have you got it? Yes, we have. Can you see it? No. And in our prayers to see that manifest, you're praying that it will get pulled through the veil to be manifest in what we see. And someone asked the question, what happens if it doesn't? What happens if you die? And he said, well, you get pulled the other way. You don't lose your inheritance. That really helped me when my father died. I've been praying for years that he'd be healed. I believe God had shown me that he would be healed. I was holding on to that in faith. I know that he's with the Lord. I know that he is healed. I didn't see it in this life. Doesn't mean to say it wasn't true. And we have to hold on in faith to what God has shown us. And Joshua's legacy, the people served God all through his lifetime and that of the elders who outlived him. That's a great legacy. That what he brought, what he led, the people of his generation followed God and walked forward. So I have, in closing, I just have some specific questions that I really want us to think about. I'm not going to ask for us to share or get into groups or anything. I just want you to consider this for yourself. What is our view of what God has shown us or prophesied into our lives? And where are our buts? Do we see God's presence as bigger than our fears and disappointments? We sang it earlier, but is what we sing actually true in our lives? In your presence, all our fears are washed away. Or is his presence not big enough? Is he not good enough? Is he not capable enough? And are we living in the expectancy of promise fulfilled? Do we really believe that God will come through? You know, some of the words that I've had is praying for the sick. I've done a little bit of that. I haven't done much recently. So this really speaks to me. It really challenges, will I believe that God will come through? You might have a different ministry, but I would just ask the question, do you really believe that God will come through for what you've been shown and what you're being asked to do? Are we settling on this side of Jordan? Or are we leaving it to the younger folk because they might have more energy? Or like Caleb, are we determined, really determined to see this through? How do we overcome what is stopping us achieving what God has called us to? And going back to that analogy of worship, how do we hold each other's hands up? How do we encourage each other? How do we get alongside each other? So I'll just leave you to think about that for a few moments. And I've got a song which we'll get, I'll give you the nod in a second, Jorgen, just to finish with.